comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking The Judge.
I object.
Sustained.
Oh, okay. I was going to request a continuance. But...
Wait a minute. I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, aloha!
Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, dive into a mostly spoiler-free movie review, then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 167.
Three away from 170.
That's true, not false.
Yes, arithmetic, thank you.
Sesame Street, yay! And today, 4167, we're talking about the film The Judge, starring Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. And joining us, we have a new first-time guest, Abe. I'm so excited.
Yay!
I feel like Abe would share that excitement. Apparently not.
I thought you were going to go right into the name of it, and I was going to be like, pew! Like, you know, fireworks.
Those are the sounds I make. You're in that order, too. Pew, 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 pew. Yeah, that's what I do. Anyway,
it's shooting into the sky, and then it explodes.
Yeah, we have a new guest. From MovieViral.com and GeeksOfDoom.com, dishonoring courtrooms everywhere, it's Michael Lee.
Hello, guys. What's up?
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great.
And just with that great opening, man. It's just a dud, basically. Like, oh, great.
We're not talking about the judge yet. Anyway, let's move on. But yeah, good to have you. Always fun to have new guests on the show. That's what I always say. And because it's true. That's why.
I say that, too.
Yeah.
You just don't, because the fireworks are so loud.
Yeah, that's why.
Exactly.
Yeah, three-man crew this week, keeping it light, because, you know, sometimes you just have to speed things up, like trials. But let's get into some show notes here before we get into the main swing of things. iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show, helps other people find our show. We got a couple new ones recently, and we're quite happy about those. And yeah, if you log into iTunes, you maybe add a simple sentence or so, or maybe a star rating on Out Now with Aaron and Abe. It's very, very helpful for everybody involved, and just, you know, fun to do and not time consuming, I would say. But there you go.
Not bad.
All right. What else? New commentary coming soon. I teased this last week, and I'll tease it again. Maybe this week we'll get to actually record it, but it should be a good one. We do a new commentary every month, and we're always having fun doing them, and we certainly know how to pack them with info, so be prepared for...
Might be one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my life.
No, because as last week I said, we're not doing a scary movie despite it being October, but we are doing a film in the Carpenter realm.
Okay.
Tease it out.
Well, that Carpenter guy.
Yeah.
Knows how to make a couch.
Speaking of October horror and Carpenter, though, we do have our bonus horror episodes that we've been recording. Myself, friend of the show, Brandon Peters, Jimmy O from Joe Blow, and Jason Coleman from Star Pulse. We've been covering various decades of horror over the course of the month, and we just released our second one, which covers the 50s and 60s. And then this Friday, we'll have an episode devoted entirely to 70s horror, so that should be a lot of fun. And yeah, every Friday, there is a new bonus horror episode coming out everywhere on iTunes, SoundCloud, everywhere you can find our show. And there is a contest, which I announced last week here, as well as on that show as well. If you email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com or just send us a message on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, let us know, list out the decades, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and what your favorite horror film for each of those decades. You send us that, a list of that, you'll be in a raffle. And I have a whole bunch of horror Blu-rays that I will send to the winner of that raffle. And it's not like our raffles are, you know, making in, you know, 50 people or more. So it's pretty easy to win this contest, I would say. By the end of this month, we'll get a few, I'm sure. And one of those people will probably win. Or I can split it up. We'll see. It depends on how many people enter. Because I do have it's quite a stack of Blu-rays here. I know I got I'm looking over at it right now. It's fine.
You're going to get a high five from Abe.
Yeah, well, I put that in the letter that I write, the handwritten notes that I write, which is really the best part of the package I sent you.
It actually is handwritten.
Yeah.
The card and everything.
Okay. All right, but yeah, contest going on now. All right, so let's move in now. Let's get out of that. Let's get into this. Let's go to Little Know Everybody, where each week Abe and I ask questions out to the panel and try to set the tone for the podcast. I better get to Know Everybody. That was pretty good.
Yeah, this was sweet. It wasn't bad.
Why don't you start?
Sure, okay. All right. Both of you guys, Michael and Aaron, if you guys went back to your hometown, which, Aaron, you know, just pretend like you're not in your hometown.
Okay.
Would you go to your room and be like, oh, there's all this stuff here? Or would you just be like, yeah, I'm just going to go sleep in another room?
No, I'd be all about my room.
But there's so much stuff in there.
Oh, I mean, if that's a... Yeah, because my room is awesome. No, I get what you're referencing.
Yeah. Hey.
I get what you're referencing, but no, I just...
I'm pretty sure
I'd move that stuff out.
You would, okay.
If there was stuff in the way, I would...
There's like... Your parents have just thrown... It's just like a junk room now.
Yeah, if there was stuff in the way, I'd move that stuff out. I wouldn't, like, perhaps sleep on, like, the chair and not try at all, like some people...
There are four other rooms in the house.
Yeah, but
He has two other brothers.
But it's my room.
Yeah. I mean, my room's basically the one with all the junk, basically, actually. all my posters, Mondo posters that I collected.
Mondo.
That's what it is.
Yeah, you collect a lot of Mondo posters, yeah.
So I guess your room has
to be your room. What would you do, Abe?
I'd be practical. I'd be like, okay, well, I'm only staying here for 3 days. My room has all this stuff in it. I will go find another room.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And then if I had to go to trial and I had to stay longer, then I would probably think about moving some stuff out, just because it's a giant mess.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Who could play a good judge in a movie? Like, what actor would you want to see, like, play a judge character?
What kind of a judge character? An angry judge character?
It doesn't matter. I'm just like, who's an actor that you think would be judgely and would play one in a movie?
Yeah. What's the guy's name?
He's a fun
Tombstone.
Judge. It could be Sam Elliott?
Sam Elliott, yeah.
I like how there's so many people in Tombstone. I just narrow it down to one guess. Sam Elliott?
Kurt Russell could be a good judge, too, but Sam Elliott, he's got that gravitas about
it. Screw you, too. You're guilty, judge. Kurt Russell.
And hell's Russell. Coming with me.
Yeah.
Guilty.
He'd literally be fire and brimstone.
I think J.K. Simmons would be a good judge.
J.K. Simmons would be an excellent judge.
Has he been a judge? That makes me wonder.
I mean, he did judge Peter Parker's photos.
I wouldn't be surprised if he has played a judge, but yeah, I can't think of him as a judge.
Or,
yeah,
I mean, like Judge Reinhold.
Mock trial of Judge Reinhold.
My name is Judge.
Just finally make that show come to life.
Okay, so I guess that's my question.
If you have one, I guess.
Yeah, if you have one.
Generally, it's just Abe and I. Yeah. You can do it if you want.
Who's the one person you wouldn't expect to see at a breakfast?
Who's the one person I wouldn't expect to see at a breakfast?
Let's see.
Yeah.
Like if I walk downstairs and it's like, oh my god, you!
Yeah, you! Walk in a diner or whatever.
Let's see. Let me think.
I'd say Aaron.
You'd say me?
Yeah. You're like, what are you doing up here?
I was just there.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing in Northern California?
Oh my god. That's funny.
That'd be really spooky if Aaron did show up, though.
Pretty good. I'm going to go with that answer, too. Abe.
Yeah, like Abe just, like, unannounced, just like, what is Abe doing in my house?
I go, he's finished this podcast, and I walk downstairs and, like...
I'm actually in your house. The call is coming from inside your house in the basement.
I like that. All right.
Good. That was a good question.
All right.
I like you taking the initiative on that one.
I know. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Yes.
We used to do this show where the guest went, where I'd ask the guests to prepare questions in advance, and that was always the one thing they forgot to do. Despite always being on the show, we frequently, like, say, Scott Mendelson or Mark Hoban, for example.
Oh.
And then we were just like, hey, by the way, you know, just be on the show and talk about the movie now.
Yeah.
And the trailer.
I give 100% on these things, guys. Come on.
There you go, man.
You're already ensuring your return visit to the show.
But it depends on the game.
Yeah, the game. The game is what's good to decide. Yeah.
Oh, the game.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Or to say, you know, duh game with the D.
No, we say the game. This is a professional podcast, Abe.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We're not eating buddies of your breakfast. We're not eating breakfast with buddies.
Yeah. What's a buddy breakfast?
Never had one of those?
J.K.
Simmons buddy breakfasts. They're great.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's just handing these with a thumbs up. While he's holding the biscuit.
Do you want one?
J.K. Simmons buddy breakfast.
Can't do J.K. Simmons.
I think he's going to sell us State Farm insurance.
Yeah.
J.K. Right. Simmons, just do the yellow M&M for those commercials.
Wait, the yellow M&M? That's J.K. Simmons?
Yeah.
the really, like, this is it.
That was,
this
see,
is
see you can do it already. You're already good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's J.K. Simmons.
I did not know that was him.
Yeah, that's J.K. Simmons.
I didn't know that was J.K. Simmons. Well, get on him for doing a voice.
So, that was No Everybody.
Oh, No Everybody. I was like, the judge?
Great timing.
Yeah. All right, let's move on now. Let's get down to quickies.
Yep.
Each week and out now, we have one main movie of the week that we talk about. That we have other tech movies that we see during the week.
TM.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Kind of trail off there, but I'm gonna, you know what? You're so good at it that we're just gonna pretend like it was all there.
Some would say I could, you know, easily insert that one from last week and put it in.
I would agree, or any other week.
But definitely not gonna do that. I'm just gonna leave the really trailed off version.
Because it's real.
And it takes time. All right, Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
Pass.
Just not watch. You didn't watch anything at all.
I didn't watch anything else at all.
There's nothing else that you've seen this week at all.
Besides college football, no.
Okay.
Oh, well, I guess that's me. Yeah. I saw Dracula Untold and Whiplash.
Well, why don't you talk about Dracula Untold? Blah.
Blah. Well, that's where it's mostly leaning towards. Blah. I mean, well, it had those action-y moments, but it's all bluster, and they try to twist it, I guess, by making it more of a historical piece, quote-unquote historical piece, but yeah, it just wasn't working. It was just more style over substance to me, and even saying that is just putting it lightly, I guess.
Yeah, I've been saying this about it. They got the poster right. That's my basic reaction to the movie.
They got the poster. The poster is pretty cool. I mean, yeah. They have a lot of. Are you talking about the one with, like, it's
any of them? All the posters
okay,
are pretty.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, all the posters actually.
Any of the posters.
Yeah, but yeah, no, the movie is not good. It's like it's less of a historic. It's more of like a superhero movie that just happens to be like set in a period. It's just it's a very boring superhero, which is a shame because Dracula is an inherently interesting character, except when you strip everything away from him, except the fact that he broods and has like a special power. Which in this case is to turn into bats.
Oh, okay. I was like, what's his special power? Like, ground pound?
What'd you think it was, Abe? He's Dracula. He has an assortment of special powers.
Yeah, there was a ground pound moment, though.
Yeah, he does have it. Yeah, he has this Thor ground pound moment.
And there was history, though. There, a little bit. Like, Vladimir Impaler, 1940-something.
Yeah, 1940s Vladimir
Impaler. Yeah, 1940s.
He's walking around. He's wearing a trench coat and a bowler cap. It's great.
No, it's like
Bulgaria. Yeah, it's me, Dracula.
Yeah, exactly.
1462, it's like, okay. They barely brushed over that.
It continues to make me excited for the Vlad the Impaler movie that may someday come out, but there's that, like, 5-minute opening segment in Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, where it has, like, the kind of the purposely done, like, practical effects to show the Vlad the Impaler backstory. That 5-minute segment's better than all of Dracula Untold. It's just, it's like, why do I need to watch all of this? I like Luke Evans too. Like, I'm a Luke Evans fan, but
I do like Luke Evans.
He wasn't good in the movie.
He's not bad in the movie. It's just he's not interesting. He's got nothing to do except, you know, be this brooding guy. It's like, hey, don't hurt my family. Let me turn to bats now. Charles Dance is fun, although he should dance more.
Don't hurt my family. Let me turn to bats. Now, that logic just seems ridiculous. If they were right there, they're gonna be beheaded right in front of them. It's like, let me turn to bats now.
It's funny, though, because we could have talked about Dracula Untold, but we didn't, and it's just, like, nothing to say.
End of podcast.
Let's see. I can talk about another movie that I saw. St. Vincent.
Ah.
This was the film with Bill Murray and Melissa McCarthy and Naomi Watts and even Terrence Howard for some reason.
But Terrence Howard?
His role is really unnecessary.
Oh, okay.
Actually, remember, did you ever see Delivery Man last year, Abe?
No, I didn't.
Did you see the original version?
Is he the title character?
No, but yeah, he's St. Vincent. Terrence Howard.
No. Man, he was a Delivery Man.
No. No, but he played Terrence Howard's role. This has nothing to do with most of the movie, but he's a loan shark guy collecting debts, and Bill Murray, okay, like, he's a big gambler.
Sounds like a pimp grew up, yeah.
Yeah. But he's the head of this mob subplot that I just don't need in these movies where it's like the guy has debts and like the mob comes in. It's like,
wait, what movie was this?
In St. Vincent. But in Delivery
Vincent.
But in Delivery Man, there's the same thing where Vince Vaughn like owes money and there's like this mob subplot. It's like, why is this a thing? Like, why is this like a weird thing to happen? And, like, this movie's dealing with like this guy who has all these kids, or St. Vincent deals with this guy who is inadvertently become the mentor to a kid, but for some reason we have to have some mob subplot to, like, make the plot move for some, like, there's no other creative.
I did not see that coming at all in the trailer.
There's no other creative way to, like, get the plot to move a certain direction bit, except for having a mob subplot. And I see it in other movies, too, which is just like, why is that a thing? That
is actually another mob guy in that Colin Farrell movie.
Which one?
With the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I forget the name of the movie.
Oh, the Dead Man Down.
Dead Man Down, yeah.
Yeah, but that movie's about the mob. Like, I expect a mob plot in the movie about the mob.
But St. Vincent, I was thinking, yeah, it's just like this sweet kid and Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah, it's just these kind of like, yeah, these art house films where, like, you have the lead star.
Hell, there's
like,
the mob in there?
Yeah. So it's a trope that I don't really like. But you're pushing way past this. Regardless, some tropes aside and weird cliches aside, like, the movie's fine. Like, it's fun. Like, Bill Murray is really good in it. It has these elements of drama that work well.
Liz McCarthy doing well?
Liz McCarthy's good in it, yeah. She's not it's not reliant on her to be, like, outlandish Melissa McCarthy character. It's just more of her being single mother trying to raise a kid, and she's good. Like, and it's not surprising to me. Like, I see elements
of
that.
Yeah, I know. I think she's a really good actress. I think
yeah.
She ends on the role.
But, yeah, it was a... It's worth a see, I'd say, just for that Bill Murray.
They fall in love at the end, right?
No, that's what Naomi Watts is for. Who goes all out in this movie, by the way. She plays, like, this stripper who's pregnant, and it's the way they kind of do her. She's like a Russian immigrant the movie takes place in Long Island. She's in Long Island, and she's like a stripper, and she's pregnant, and it's like,
she's
wow.
She's like Mila Jovovich, and he got game then.
A little bit. Not pregnant.
right.
But, for having the broadest of the characters in terms of, like, having a crazy accent and having a pregnant belly and being a stripper, she gets a lot of good laughs in there.
Oh, okay, good.
So, yeah, there's that. All right.
St. Vincent.
You know, I'll also add, just because I don't want to add too much time to this, but Alexander and the terrible, horrible, very no good, bad, whatever, all that, it's fine. It's a fine, harmless family film. Like, if I got a family, you want to go see it, go see it. It's fine. It's
no mobs in that, right?
No mob subplots in that movie.
No.
Exactly right. No
mob. It's actually played by Terrence Howard again.
Yeah.
Hey, man. The same mobster, too.
That's how you spend money on that volcano project. Where's my money?
That's your Terrence Howard?
Yeah, man. That's the best I can do.
That's pretty good.
All right. Let's move on now. Let's get to trailer talk. That was on Quickie, by the way.
Tim.
Okay. Let's get to trailer talk. Each week we talk about one of the newest movie trailers that came out, when they're coming out, what we thought of them, and what have you. This week we're talking about American Sniper. This is the new film from director Clint Eastwood, who decided to follow up the disaster that was Jersey Boys with a better film that looks, you know, somewhat better. This one stars Bradley Cooper as, who's apparently the most deadly U.S. sniper of ever.
All time, man.
He has the record.
The film apparently also stars Sienna Miller. I mentioned that because the trailer wants to go out of its way to tell me that Sienna Miller's in this movie, so thank you. and
she's a good actress when she has...
I haven't seen her in a while. Or at least not in, like, this sort of prominence.
I would agree that I haven't seen her in a while.
In this kind of prominence. So it's like, well, that's interesting. They really want to highlight the fact that she's in it. So I guess, it's, you know, it's a two-hander. They were in Bradley Cooper. Bearded Bradley Cooper.
Weighty bit Bradley Cooper.
With all that in mind, Abe, what did you think of the trailer for American Sniper?
I thought that the trailer was amazing. It's just like a scene from the film. And I thought that it was incredibly tense. But at the same time, I do want to say that I want to caution myself and keep my expectations a little bit tempered, primarily because of Jersey Boys this past year. And I know Clint Eastwood, he kind of is hit and miss sometimes, too. So this is a particular scene, and I don't want it to say that, oh, the rest of the movie is going to be this good and whatever else. So I'm excited for it, and I'm you know, it looks like it's going to be very, very good. But, again, I want to make sure that I don't go in with such high expectations.
Michael?
I would have to agree. I mean, like you said, it's just one whole scene. So just to rely on that and judge the whole movie after that, it's just so hard. So I'm going to keep it, you know, my expectations low, but it looks pretty good. So after all his streak of bad movies so far, looks like Clint Eastwood's coming back. So we'll see.
I mean, it's in his wheelhouse. I think that's something we can agree on.
Agreed.
I mean, Jersey Boys was like you know, I'm going to do a musical. Like, it's just like...
A Star is Born, so he got to wish to that.
Yeah, so, I mean, this American Sniper, it feels like a movie that Clint Eastwood would be directing. And I can't say that about the last several Clint Eastwood movies. Like, you look at Jersey Boys, obviously it's like, oh, musical, okay. And you look at Jedgar, which is awful. But
who wants a buddy?
And it's like such a it's just standard biopic, but with Clint Eastwood's, like, let's make it, like, really tinted gray look on top of it. Hereafter was his psychic drama, which I kind of liked, but I don't love that movie at all. And then you have Invictus,
his
Mandela, like, it's whatever. Like, but, like, you're never gonna watch that movie again.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good for what it was.
And then there's The Weird World, where everyone seemed to love Gran Torino, and I find that inexplicable.
I would agree.
Like, that movie. Changeling I actually like quite a bit, but even then, it's like, I'm not gonna watch it again. And then you have, like, Letters of Iwo Jima and Flags of Our Father, which
I've heard were both very good.
They're fine, like, but they're certainly more in East. Like, those movies seem like movies Eastwood would make.
As yeah, I know. Like, that's,
these
that's
last
what
like
I
six
figured
that
I
just
like,
mentioned.
Little House.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, kind of like a more of like a military type film. Yeah. Even though he does a lot of other genres.
Well, yeah, he's gone all. He's done every type of movie.
Yeah,
at this
including
point.
Musical.
Like,
right.
He's a very eclectic director. But yeah. I mean, Bridges of Madison County.
I forgot about that.
Space Cowboys.
He directed Space Cowboys?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, wow. He did.
Everything he's wow. in, he's direct. Like, there's only like two movies in the last like 30 years that he has it's like directed
one
that
with,
he also
like,
started.
Him and the orangutan.
No, that well, that's older than that.
Oh, okay.
And there's two of those. because he was that devoted to it. No, what's it? Trouble with the Curve with him and. Timberlake.
That
baseball movie. And then In the Line of Fire with him and Malkovich, where he's the Secret Service agent. That was like the last, those two movies are like the last ones he starred in without directing the movie.
Gotcha. Wow. Clint.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, yeah, he has like 35 plus movies he's directed at this point. Like, he's certainly as much a director as he is an actor. So. But with all that said, I like this trailer a lot. I think it's a terrific trailer. I think this does everything it needs to do to sell a movie for you, for anybody, really. I mean, it's tense. It gives you glimpses of everything else that's going on in terms of, like, who this guy is and, like, what's going on with him. And, yeah, it just – it's a very effective trailer. And because it's, you know, fits more with Eastwood's style or, you know, what, like, I'd be happy to see Eastwood doing as a director, I am already intrigued by that, so. But even Jersey Boys, I was curious just because he was directing a musical. Like, I wanted to see that movie.
I know,
like,
I wanted to see
it.
And also, they had the musical numbers. I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty catchy.
Yeah,
just, let's go see it. And then we saw the movie. I was like,
it's like that it had no life in it because that's not, it's just not Eastwood's thing.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no, that's how you cut a trailer, guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the movie itself, meh.
So we'll see. But I'm certainly looking forward to American Sniper. I want to be on the optimistic side. And with that said, it comes out... I believe in limited release on Christmas December 25th.
Wow.
Then kind of spreads wider in January for, you know, so like Oscar consideration, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So that was trailer talk. Let's move on now. Let's get to our, thank you. Let's get on to our main, our main film review for The Judge.
You're standing in one of the last great cathedrals in this country. Built on the premise that you and you alone are responsible for the consequences of your actions.
You have anything else to say for yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an affirmation.
Yeah, it's not an affirmation a man uses in court. Henry?
Judge?
Yeah, the way he shakes my hand, always hugging everyone else. I have memories of us, you, me, and I don't. How come?
That should have been some of the trailer for The Judge. So this is the film that stars Robert Downey Jr. as a big city lawyer who goes back to his hometown for the funeral of his mother. There he meets with his estranged father, the judge, played by Robert Duvall, the town judge, of course. An accident happens, and now Duvall is looking at serious jail time for hitting somebody with his car. But maybe father and son can put aside their differences in order to get past this legal issue. Drama ensues. So yeah, there's that. Michael. What'd you think of The Judge?
Put it lightly again, I guess, cliched, something we've seen before, and just relatively nothing new. Except if you're interested in the father and son aspect of the dynamics, yeah, that'd be pretty fun to watch, sure. But As for everything else, not so much. I'm not so much interested in that, so...
All right. Abe?
The Judge certainly is a movie that is...
Certainly is a movie. You're right.
Yeah, I do agree that it certainly is a movie, period. For the most part, it's a movie that centers around this father-son relationship, but the problem is they throw so many elements into it as well, and they so throw so many characters into it that you just don't really care about some of the aspects, and that shouldn't be the takeaway that we get, because the acting in this, I think, is really strong, especially from the two moments, or the moments between just Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall when they're arguing and whatever else. Those are really good moments, and even Vincent D'Onofrio, I miss that guy. Like, that guy is a really good dramatic actor. But the problem is they throw in stuff like old girlfriends. They throw in stuff like...
Old girlfriend's daughter.
Old girlfriend's daughter for whatever reason.
How can I make out with both of them?
They also throw in stuff like flashback movie sequences. They throw in stuff like old mom sequences. Like, why does this matter? And they also have this huge problem that they talk about, they avoid talking about through the entire movie, which is what happened between the father and the son. And they finally get to it in the last 10 minutes of the movie, and that part is just like, oh, well, shit. I mean, like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life, because they talk about all this drama, they never address any of it, there's too many moments of levity when there should be none, and I don't know, like, the problem with the movie is it's just tonally all over the place. The characters, there's too many of them. There's also Billy Bob Thornton, who comes off as like a really mean guy. But when you hear the reason why he chooses the case, it's a valid reason.
Well, he doesn't come off as mean. The movie comes off as mean towards him because he pulls out like a retractable water cup and makes it sound like a sword being drawn. Right. Like,
yeah.
But then they have like this moment where they talk about that, why he's doing it. And again, it's a valid reason why he's doing it. He just has seen too many things Robert Downey Jr.'s character has done, and he's tired of it. At the end of the movie, he becomes like this, you know, nice guy. But anyway, the movie itself, it's really all over the place. I did like the acting in it. Cinematography was just really off too. There were really beautiful moments, but we'll get to that later.
I mean,
anyway, that's my quick synopsis. Aaron,
so we could have talked about Dracula Untold.
We could talk about
this movie as we were kind of deciding for last week. And honestly, walking away from everything that came out, we probably just should have just talked about Gone Girl again this week, because this movie's terrible.
Like, no, I think this movie provides a lot for us to talk about.
I guess, but this movie's terrible. That's where I'm at this point. Like, I was happy to say, you know, it's not good. Like, Robert Downey Jr., I'm glad that he had, like, a passion project. He helped produce it. He and his wife have a new production company, and this is, like, the first, like, release of that. And I'm glad that he's, you know, right, really trying to champion it. But he should know better. Like it feels like the script for this movie feels like a movie he would make fun of in one of his other roles. Because, like, you've seen him play this kind of character before.
Yeah.
But, like... this movie's the kind that like forces him to dial it back so he can go back to his hometown and feel good about being a human again and not just a big city lawyer and, you know, rekindle that old romance and do every kind of cliche thing you have when you're like when you have these kind of movies where you're supposed to like reignite the things that you grew up with, like, you know, get back with your brothers,
values.
Get back with your family, get back, yeah, that core values, exactly. Mixed with like this legal case that's just really uninteresting. There's nothing out of the ordinary about this court case that exceeds any other kind of courtroom drama you've ever seen before. I think the performances, they're fine because that's what you get when you have, you know, A-list actors like Downey right. Jr., Duvall, Farmiga, Billy Bob Thornton, Vincent. Like none of them are doing bad stuff here. It's just, who cares? Like you mentioned like Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall having like great scenes together. Those scenes will be better. They're good as they are, I guess, just because these two are really committing to those roles. But they'd be better if they weren't like just so overly directed. There's the scene where like where they're like arguing at each other, and it could just be them arguing. But instead, to make sure you hammer home the symbolism and the emotions that are supposed to be felt by the audience, it's during a giant windstorm.
Right.
And it's like, yeah. What's happening?
Thanks for the symbolism.
Or you have like, yeah, you have them like driving around in a car and they stop and then both men are walking away from each other and you have a giant framing of that shot to make sure you see the separation between them. It's just
the
so
distance between the two.
It's like, so overly directed. David Dobkin, who directed this movie, who's mainly done comedy, like The Change Up and Wedding Crashers and one of Scott Mendelson's favorite movies of all time, Shanghai Nights, not a joke. I mean, he directs this movie as like the most heavy-handed drama you could imagine. And it's like, was that like in the script, or like was Danny Jr. just saying bigger guys, or like what? I don't know what it was, but this.
Let me throw some more money at it.
Exactly, and that money led to a 2-hour and 20-minute movie for a movie that could have been, you know, a tight like 100 minutes maybe.
That's my problem too. Like and the word tight. Like it's,
yeah, it's just not
a tight movie.
It's not
it
that.
Goes all over the place.
No, yeah.
Why do you have to have this scene of him taking out his bicycle, wearing an old Metallica shirt, driving or riding through town? There's no need for that, because that's not what the movie is centered around. It should be centered around this drama between the father and son and the courtroom case. But instead, it's like, oh, let me go explore everything.
Well, even if it is still that, every scene in this movie, there could be like 1 minute devoted to, there's 3 minutes devoted to. So it's just like longer because they wanted it to be more directed and more acted and more like just more of more. You can't just see the judge shake his hand while he hugs everyone else. You have to see Robert Downey Jr. explain that he did that. Like, we get it. Like,
in front of his brothers.
You can't sympathize with the character without making it overly long. You just have to be like, oh, this is it, and make it longer and longer and longer. And say, okay, now we sympathize with the character sort of thing.
And then yeah. You get the – and I mentioned this. You get the running joke where, like, did he commit incest? Like, what happened here? We're like,
yeah, that topic is really – I think it's just really makes the film a giant comedy at that point.
It's a week after where we get Gone Girl, where we have like several female characters that are all very different from each other, doing all kinds of things. And then you get this movie where you have both the main female characters are ones that made out with Robert Downey Jr. and they haven't related to each other. Like,
right.
What's happening?
They have a really spooky scene where his daughter does something with her hair, and it's like. This is disgusting.
Exactly.
This
movie
is really gross.
Like, what's happening?
Yeah. It's like, why did they do that? Because now, basically, this movie is a giant cesspool of disgust.
Also, Robert Downey Jr. is supposed to be, the best lawyer. He can do anything. He doesn't do much lawyering in this movie. Like, you don't really see him be the best lawyer. Like, when does he do much?
I mean, he throws some notepads over at Dax Shepard.
He throws a notepad because he does.
Because he wants him to object, which I thought
about
too.
He wants
him
to say the word object, because you've never seen the lawyer do that before. And then he's able to dictate.
He's lawyering in that scene.
That's not a lawyer. He's not even a lawyer. Like, he's just writing things down and getting angry. And then, like, at the end of this, the climax of this movie, it relies on him just being emotional. Like, let me get teary-eyed, and that's why. Is that, like, his lawyer tactic for every case he's ever worked? Because that's not really evidence of him being the best lawyer.
So that was my problem with the end of the movie, or that ending courtroom scene, which is, why did the judge allow all this, you know, in between the father and son?
Oh, my God, yeah.
The judge should say, object, this is not the people's court, this is a court in the United States of America, take your drama somewhere else.
Well, if you look at any courtroom drama, like ones like this especially, where if you've ever been in a courtroom, they're brightly lit, and this is the kind of movie where it's just super dark inside.
Dark, yeah.
They create that cinematic atmosphere.
They want to bring that tone, man. They want to bring the tone of being serious.
I know. And it's funny, you look at like comedy courtroom dramas, and they're all well lit, and you look at dramas, and they're just really starkly lit. Like, yeah. You can really tell the tone
of a
movie.
There's streaks of sunlight coming out through the windows.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Let's talk about acclaimed cinematographer and Academy Award winner Janusz Kaminski, Spielberg's guy who did the cinematography for this movie, and how the movie manages to look ugly and pretty at the same time, because that's what he accomplished.
My problem with the cinematography is that you do get hints of really beautiful cinematography, and then it switches into something that is overly stylized, overly done, and I didn't understand it. The parts that I'm talking about, so there's some nice wide shots. But then there's parts where Robert Duvall is right behind a giant beam of light, and he's in his home office, and he's talking to Robert Downey Jr. It's like, why do you have this shot? It's very jarring. It doesn't really – like, sure, I get it. It's supposed to show that Robert Duvall is – you know, he has high stature. But at the same time, it's just – it doesn't make any sense. And sometimes the close-ups are too close, and sometimes they're not close enough. And then it felt like somebody else did the cinematography, like two people did it. I didn't like that.
My least favorite shot of this movie is one that like involves CG, which was about as terrible as that one scene in Wolverine in the X-Men Origins Wolverine, where like Wolverine looks at his claws and somehow it looks like a child drew with crayon the claws because apparently we don't know how to get Wolverine's claws right.
That's not how that happened.
Four movies in, we don't know how to get Wolverine's claws right with CG. But like in this movie, there's a shot of Robert Downey Jr. driving into town in his SUV, and it starts like from a close up on his face and pans out. And it's so obviously CG, yeah. Where like you see all the farmland around him. It's completely like, it feels like unrendered. It feels like this is like their first pass at it, and they didn't really keep going on it.
I was thinking, like, how did they do that?
by using CG because it looks so terrible.
I was like, that's impossible. They couldn't have used a crane, and maybe they just used two shots.
They did use two shots, just not seamlessly blended together. Very unseamlessly blended together. It's just stuff like it's like why are we going so big? That's my my question throughout this movie. Every scene's overacted. Every directorial choice is overly done. The score is big and large because Thomas Newman's doing that for the movie.
The score is ridiculous, by the way. And feel free to interject, Michael. I mean, the score is ridiculous because it is exactly what you would notice in cheesy movies. Because it swells at the dramatic parts. And it's like, why are you doing this? Like, I understand that there's so much drama. I've seen an hour, right. 45 minutes of drama. I don't need to have the score also indicate to me that this is a dramatic scene.
That's where I agree too. It's just everything has to be so overblown, I guess, and to sell the point that this is a drama. It's just you guys could tone it down and scale back a bit and just make it more calm and focus on like saying this is small town America sort of thing, and small town America has to be pretty big, I guess. So it's just it's. To me, it's just heavy-handed.
God.
Over the top, yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point about the town, too. They showed the town so much, you never see any of the town. Like, you never
right? You don't really know this town.
I just thought about that right now when you said that. Aaron, you get the sweeping shot right when he first enters, which are the cornfields. You see him wave at a few people.
You see him driving to town. It's the kind of town that has, like, a big banner on the top that says, like, the new Harvest Festival's coming or something like that.
One of the people he meets in the town, his ex-girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend's daughter.
Some guys that he,
and
like,
a few
says,
guys
like,
that want to punch him in the face. And then the defendant's family. That's it. Anybody else. And I was like, wow, that's a good point, Michael. You have this huge – or this small town, but you don't meet any of it despite the fact that Robert Downey Jr. goes around town, walks around. It's like – I don't understand this movie. There's too many characters, but not enough?
Downey Jr. also a dick in this movie, by the way. He plays that well. Like he does that in a lot of movies. I mean, Tony Stark's a dick. But does he really learn anything at the end beyond like the – and this is hardly a spoiler, but beyond the – I got along with my father, and like home is where the heart is. Like, does he learn anything? Like, it's not like he's moving back into town and becoming a defense attorney a prosecutor.
That is left uncertain at the end.
But it's like I don't feel like he did. I don't feel like he's about to turn around his entire lawyering career so he can
I would agree with that.
So and he can defend the good guy because he's a lawyer that defends like the bad guys. That's what he's known for. He gets the bad guys because they pay more.
Poor people can't afford him. That's one of the problems I had too, which is I don't think that I'm getting anything. There's kind of a personal arc, but there's no like, you know, huge character arc. Why? Because in the beginning you have an unnecessary character, his wife, who he has problems with. That's not resolved, even though the daughter brings up some questions of, are you guys going to get a divorce? Because I see you guys are packing.
Well, clearly they're getting a divorce, but I mean, the thing with the daughter is not resolved at all.
Daughter part is not resolved, but also, why did you even have his wife show up? I thought already he was a single father. There's no need for that, and even that part is over-dramatic because the sound fades out, and you hear some arguing in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, this is dumb. And then Robert Downey Jr., I'm glad that he has an R-rated movie because he can swear to his heart's content, and he's really good at swearing on camera. Like, fantastic. He emotes very well when he says the word F. You know, so it's like, it's really good. But
we haven't talked about this family at all either. We haven't talked much about Vincent D'Onofrio or young, simple brother. And it's called, he's simple because you don't want to offend anybody. So we just say simple in this movie.
Good actor.
Jeremy Strong is the actor's name. Who plays?
I feel like I've seen him before.
Probably he's probably popped up in things. I can't think of anything offhand. But he plays Brother Dale. He was in Lincoln. He's in Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah.
Yeah. He just pops up.
He's in Robot and Frank. So.
I love Robot and Frank. But yeah, he plays like simple brother. But it's the epitome of like cliche, like simple. Like his quirk is that he holds an 8 millimeter film camera at all times. And of course he doesn't show film from his camera once, not twice, but three times in this movie. And of course, like the one important film is the one that has like every single major character involved and everyone happens to be watching it at the same time. It's the pivotal moments where everything changed for everybody. It's just like
I do agree that his character is simple, but the family aspect. So I like the family aspect of it. I like the three brother dynamic. I like the father is he wants to be called Judge because all the brothers call him Judge. But the problem is that after about, you know, like 30 minutes of the movie, they're gone from the movie. Or maybe a little bit longer because the movie's so long. But they're gone for like a pretty good chunk of it. And then they show up at the courtroom for, just for the drama parts. And I was thinking this would be a cool dynamic to have throughout the entire film of, you know, learning about these guys. And I like Vincent D'Onofrio's character. Like, you know, he's a star baseball player, accident, and then now he's at home and he's got a, you know, he feels as though there's like a huge burden on him because the brother went away kind of thing.
He's the older brother. It makes sense for him anyway to be the that one, I get. My problem with Vincent D'Onofrio, because I like him in the, I like him in general. Like, I think he's a great actor and I think he should be used more. And I think he's a great, he's great at doing little things and little touches in his roles that like make him kind of stand out for, especially for people that are kind of looking for it. But he needs an arc and there's no arc for him. It feels like he was a baseball player.
The movie thinks that there's an arc for him.
He was a baseball player who had an accident and has now lost the chance to be like a great thing. But they give him nothing to do with that. Like
I agree. You think him
and Robert Downey Jr., that's a very complicated relationship to have, but the movie does nothing to explore that. And
but
it's
again, the movie thinks that it did something with him because at the end they hug it out.
Oh yeah, I get that. Like, oh, I know.
They don't say anything verbally. They just like they have the "I get you, man" look and they hug it out. And that's Vincent D'Onofrio's arc, and that is like a terrible way to say, I could have had a baseball career, but you got high and ruined my life.
So my main takeaway is that this movie should have been all about Dax Shepard's character, and then I'm done.
Hey, he wasn't that bad.
I liked him. What's
his character, PJ or DJ?
CP.
CP.
the obvious one.
The obvious one, right.
I could have watched an entire movie about Dax Shepard's character. That would have been fun. I would have liked.
I mean,
that
like he sells
antiques during the day.
On the side.
And he lawyers at night. Like that's he's a superhero. He
throws up like Chris, like Thor does in Rush.
Oh yeah, he throws up. Rush debuted on HBO this weekend. I was all happy.
I actually wanted to get it on Blu-ray, by the way.
You should. It's a great Blu-ray. But yeah, I would have watched that movie just all about Dax being an inexperienced lawyer / antique salesman. That sounds like a fun movie.
That's a small town guy for you. But yeah, I mean, like for the most part, this movie, it's not very good. I think the audience that I went to go see it with, which is in the 40s, 50s, maybe 60s.
Oh, they applauded at the end,
they
right?
They liked it. Yeah they liked
it. Did they applaud
it
at the end? Because
they didn't applaud. No, they didn't applaud.
Oh, mine,
they,
yeah, rip-roaring applause at the end of mine.
But there was a lot of, like, you could hear a lot of sighing when they're on this fishing trip, and there was, like, a few moments where Robert Duvall lays down, like, this life nugget, and people were agreeing with it. You could hear it, and I was like, I guess they enjoy the actors, like, you know, Robert Duvall more than the movie, you know what I mean? So what's the word I'm looking for? They're basically liking this movie because of the actor in it, rather than
they're sentimental towards what's going on there. I mean,
because
it's the same as like Annabelle last week, where it's a movie.
People clapped.
But it's a thing where it's the worst kind of drama in the same way Annabelle's the worst kind of horror movie, where it knows what it's doing. It's very manipulative. Where Annabelle is like, it goes for the cheap scares and it doesn't have like a downer ending, so people can walk out thinking, man, that kind of scared me and I didn't feel bad at the end, so obviously good movie. And this is the same kind of thing where it's like, man, those are some good actors and it had an uplifting message, so good movie, where you just automatically applaud despite not really, for people that aren't us, that aren't like, you know, reviewing, critiquing movies on a regular basis, that walk in and just want to get some wholesome fun. And don't really want to dig into it deeper. They're just like walking out like, you know what? That was a good time because I saw a father and son get back together and there's a case and yeah. Like, And it bugs me to no end when there are other movies that are like, you know, more original and don't rely on these cliches and have other things to offer.
Maybe two storylines. You know what I mean? Like, the second storyline is so minor that it doesn't really matter, but yeah, we'll get to it in the callbacks.
It's just like, yeah, this movie, The Judge. Every, and I'm glad this is the podcast that we do, and then I'll never have to talk about this movie again. But every time it's come up in my mind or I see a commercial for it, I just like it less. I didn't like it to begin with, but it gets worse in my mind.
I was actually high on
that a little bit. I mean, it changed from like this whole dramatic marketing thing, the marketing changed from drama to a comedy, sort of, if you noticed.
Yeah, it shifted. I didn't notice that. It shifted. It was more comedy than drama, I thought, at first, actually. I thought it was more like playing up the, I'm a big city lawyer. Look at me peeing on David Krumholtz because I'm hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And then the trailer started to turn more to, I gotta help my father out. Wow, arguments.
And then the storm scenes and
speeches.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, speeches. Like, okay,
speeches.
who decided to make this shift? And so it's like, okay, well, whatever.
I read about this actually because Robert Downey Jr. had an AMA on Reddit, and he was talking, and someone asked a question about the marketing for The Judge, and he said it was because of test screenings, because people were responding more to the dramatic aspects of the film than the comedy, so we figured we'd try to shift the marketing that way. That, and you know, every time I mention Iron Man 4, people, you know, suddenly get interested in what this other movie is that I'm saying.
I bet Lee, like, he was going to make Iron Man 4 because that's all he could talk about.
Oh, no.
As opposed to The Judge.
I can't wait for next week and every week after where we hear nothing about Iron Man 4 because The Judge already opened in theaters. Just saying. But that's the last we'll hear of Iron Man 4 for a while, I assume, after this movie has come out and didn't do well. It did okay.
It did okay.
It's not an expensive movie, so it's like, you know, whatever. But
oh, also, last point, too much bathroom detail with Robert Duvall and Robert Downey Jr.
See, you say that? I think that's the best scene in the movie.
They just show too much of.
I can agree to an extent that. You see a lot of,
like,
stuff that
you
don't want to see.
Right.
But
no.
I think that the two guys, especially when another person kind of also enters that scene. I think the way they play that scene, it's the most human scene in the movie. It's the one that doesn't feel overly done in any way.
And don't get me wrong, I'm pretty sure I read and kind of know like secondhand accounts of like chemo, right? So I get that part, but they just showed the floor like four times. And I was thinking, I get it, and this is kind of gross.
I agree with you. I think the follow up to that initial part, though, I think it works really well for what that's like the best Downey Jr. Duvall scene that's not overly directed. It is just them acting.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Each week we try to rate. So let's get to the rating of the movie, Michael. Each week we try to rate movies based on when should people go see the movie. So if you had to tell people when they should see The Judge, what would you say?
I guess it depends. If you like courtroom dramas like this, go ahead and see it now, but just once. Or if you can wait, just go wait for it on rental.
Abe?
Yeah, I'm on DVD.
Yeah, you can wait for this to hit TNT premiere.
Cable TV. I'm pretty low.
Yeah, you can wait 3 years.
I mean, I don't know if I'd watch on cable TV. That's the reason why I said DVD.
Well, I'm saying, you know, if it was like...
I think other things would be come up.
It's like the network television premiere of The Judge on TNT this Sunday. That's where I'd say you could watch this movie.
It's like DVD on TV, they're telling you all these tidbits. Yeah.
Sure. Because then it'd be 4 hours, because that's what you need, right? All right, so let's move on now. Let's get to movie callback.
Callback.
This is where we go into some films that we might have thought of during or after the feature of the week. You know, if that said, Abe, what are your callbacks?
The Way, Way Back, Young Adult, Labor Day, and The Life and Times of Tony Stark.
Okay. Why Labor Day? Just because of the overly directed stuff?
No. Just because of the feel of the small town and like...
Ah, gotcha.
It's like they explore the small town a little bit more in Labor Day.
Michael?
I'm just going to reduce it to one, and it's kind of recent, and it feels like appropriately fits. This is where I leave you. I mean, this is...
Yeah. I agree. I have a lot of the same issues with that movie, actually.
That's both the title and everything. It just says, this is where I leave you. So, okay, fine. Thank you for leaving me here.
Yeah, I have my cousin Vinny, Law & Order, and Ally McBeal. So, there you go.
Ally McBeal.
Yeah. Which co-starred Robert Downey Jr. at some points, actually. I think he won Emmys for that, too. He doesn't like it. He wasn't a fan of doing that work. Because he knew he was above it. Like he said that. He said
I wasn't
that
a fan of winning awards.
He was above it.
He was above the material. But because he's Robert Downey Jr., he's a great actor.
He can nail it pretty easily.
Yeah.
I was just kidding.
All right, let's move on. Let's get to our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Each week, actually, it seems to be. We got to find some sponsors, Abe. But for now, audibletrial.com/podcast. You can go there. You can find over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 device of whatever kind. For the listeners, you can get a free audiobook if you go to audibletrial.com/podcast. Download it for free. I have less of a book and more just a category to recommend. John Grisham novels. They're all over the place on Audible.
Agreed.
You can get all of those. But you can get just one for free on audibletrial.com/podcast. You can download that or anything else you want. You can try out the service. If you don't like it, you can get rid of the service, but you get to keep that book for free. So there you go. audibletrial.com/podcast. I'm so disillusioned by the judge. I'm just talking faster. It's all I got.
Yeah, I know. I was waiting for the tagline. Be a winner. Read.
Or listen. All right, let's move on. Let's get down to feedback.
Feedback.
Get back to the fun here. This is, of course, where we go over the various answers and questions that we received on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we ask several questions first here, and you guys have a lot of responses, so I'm going to start this one off. Aside from Tony Stark, what Robert Downey Jr. performances do you love? Michael, feel free to chime in if you want to as well. But here we go. Corey has, he was great in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I agree. Jason has, he was my favorite part in Tropic Thunder. Shelley has, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and the first Sherlock Holmes. Danny has, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Tropic Thunder, Due Date, Sherlock Holmes, Chef, and Less Than Zero. Philip has, Kirk Lazarus stole the show, Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder.
Matthew has, I really liked his performance in Charlie Bartlett. Adam has, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Sherlock Holmes, Chaplin, Academy Award nominated, and Wonder Boys. Wonder Boys is a great movie. I really like that movie a lot, so I'm very happy someone said Wonder Boys. And Rebecca has, Ally McBeal.
Dot, dot, dot. She added the ellipse. Any favorite movies, Michael, or favorite roles?
I would have to agree with some of them about, what was that? Sorry, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and Zodiac, actually. I didn't hear Zodiac on that list.
Zodiac.
And Chaplin. Chaplin's one of my favorites. And, of course, Weird Science.
There you go.
Weird Science. Throwback. Next question we ask is, what are your favorite Robert Duvall roles? Joe Jans writes Max Mercy, a supporter of The Natural. Friend of the show, Susan has The Godfather. Susan, we miss you. Come back on the show. Jason has Gone in 60 Seconds, The Sixth Day, True Grit, and Jack Reacher.
The Sixth Day, okay.
Philip has...
Do you think The Sixth Day?
The Sixth Day? I even forgot about that.
He's just, you know, acting Robert Duvall-y. Philip has Hub in Secondhand Lions and EF in The Apostle.
Nice.
The Apostle, that's a good poster. I haven't seen the movie.
It is a good poster, but yeah, it's a good movie.
Matthew writes THX1133 or 38.
Yeah, there you go.
Friend of the show, the voice Jim Dietz has Tender Mercies.
Yeah.
Michael Vaughn has Boo and To Kill a Mockingbird. Scott writes Network, Gods and Generals, and The Godfather 2.
See, he's my guy. Like, he's my guy. He's Tom Hagen. He's my guy in The Godfather. Like, that's...
I agree that he's Tom Hagen. Yeah. Adam writes The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, The Apostle, and Assassination Tango.
That's a cool little movie. I remember that movie. I haven't seen that in probably, I guess, I think it was like 2002 or 1.
I remember that movie coming out. I didn't watch it, though.
That's a cool little movie. I like that one. I'm looking up his act. Like, when did that come out? That's like 2002. Okay, yeah. That's about... He has a mustache in that movie. But he's like old man, so he's old man mustache. Which is kind of
funny. Oh, okay.
Favorite courtroom-based films. Lane has, Does 12 Angry Men Count? Yes. Philip has A Time to Kill. Jason has A Few Good Men. Kara has Primal Fear. And oddly enough, I like Emily Rose for the courtroom scenes. Matthew has, most of the movie isn't in a courtroom, but the first thing that popped in my head was the courtroom scene in The Caine Mutiny. All right. Scott Mendelson has, it's not my favorite, but My Cousin Vinny is routinely cited by lawyers and law professors as the go-to show for would-be law students since it's so succinctly and accurately, unlike The Judge, captures the nuts and bolts of basic criminal law procedure. Shelley has a counter, my law school didn't recommend My Cousin Vinny, nor have I seen it since, so I can't comment on it, but my school did recommend A Civil Action. That's a good movie, with John Travolta, Civil Action. Still, my favorite is probably A Few Good Men. Class Action is another good one. So is A Time to Kill, if you want to talk about jury nullification, jury not applying to the law. Thank you, Shelley.
Is Civil Action the one where the leather industry and John Travolta has to go and figure out why the townspeople are getting sick?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
He was another big time lawyer, but then he like loses it all. So
yeah, he did lose it all.
It's a much better. That's a good callback, actually. See that. Don't see the judge. Yeah, that was because that movie.
He has to sell his house because he believes in this case.
William H. Macy is in that movie too, and one of my favorite William H. Macy lines ever is like towards the beginning of that movie. I'll have to edit this when I do it. But some guy's kind of like making noise, and he's sitting behind him. He's like, "Hey, would you can you do me a favor and shut the fuck up?" Like, it's just the funniest thing he's ever said in a movie to me. Mark Hoban has Philadelphia, Anatomy of a Murder, and Witness for the Prosecution, and then William Hale has 12 Angry Men. I think it is more important to understand the role of the jury. A lot of good answers there for that.
Yeah,
I'd throw in Social Network there too.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. It's not like a courtroom, but it is about.
But there's court elements.
There's a lot of law elements. And everything that Aaron Sorkin does, I like. So anyway, now we move into some questions. So questions you guys asked us, and we'll answer it here. Philip asks, has an A-lister ever had a creepier role than Duvall's Boo Radley?
Yeah, because immediately it came to mind, Anthony Hopkins. He's Hannibal Lecter. That's easily the creepy A-list actor role.
Talking about well-directed, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Other ones? I feel like Ralph Fiennes has been very creepy in a lot of things. Jack Nicholson's been creepy in The Shining.
He was, yeah.
Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. That's always creepy.
A-lister is a creepy guy.
A-lister's creepier than Boo Radley. Like, is Boo Radley even that creepy?
Radley is actually a good guy.
Yeah, like he's
actually just like watching out for the kids. There's just stories about him.
He's very pale. Like, it's really pale.
He's like old man Marley in Home Alone. There's stories about him, but he's actually a decent dude. Anyway.
Okay. Next question we have is this is from Matthew. What's a movie that keeps you going back and discovering new things on each repeat viewing? That's a fun question.
That is a fun question.
I 2001 A Space Odyssey is a movie that I tend to find new things every time I watch it, because Kubrick is so meticulous in his craft that I imagine a lot of Kubrick movies, I can probably find a lot more things every time I watch it too.
Yeah.
But 2001 is the one that immediately came to mind. I'd say there's a lot of animated movies.
Yeah, a lot of animated movies come to mind.
Because they have so
especially like the Pixar stuff.
Oh yeah, because
they always load in all these things that people show in websites much later.
Yeah,
it's like, I didn't realize that the truck is in all the movies. Space Pizza Planet Pizza Planet.
You remember it by just thinking of Andy's reaction when his mom says we're going to Pizza Planet, because it's like Pizza Planet. Wall-E was one specifically that came to mind too, as far as Pixar movies go. That movie's loaded with just so many things.
Disney movies too. Actually, just that's aside from the Pixar things itself, you hear like all these cameos, and actually some of the directors actually getting into the whole voice cameos too.
Directors?
Like the director of Big Hero 6. He was the spa guy. The spa guy in Frozen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Let's see.
Friend of the show, Mark Hoban, asks us, Oscar talk, can the Grand Budapest Hotel score Best Picture nomination?
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. But at the same time, if it has a good campaign, then it can, I think. But I feel like it's more than likely could get a screenplay, perhaps, and like production design, maybe. But
is it one of my favorite movies of the year? Yes. Are there going to be a lot of movies that come out during the Oscar season run-up? Yes, and that's kind of an unfortunate thing, because I think a few movies might get overlooked. I'm pretty sure Boyhood's going to get nominated.
Huh? That came out like in March, right?
It came out in March, and so, like, think of it this way. Moonrise Kingdom came out in the summer of 2 years ago. 2 years ago? 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And, I mean, that movie, it still only scored like a screenplay nomination. I mean, Grand Budapest is so far back, and while it might still be on like a lot of top 10 lists at the end of the year, and we'll certainly, have some buzz. I don't know. It depends what Fox Searchlight wants to do with the Oscar campaign. And what else they have. Because, Birdman's, probably going to be one of their big things in terms of kind of what to champion as far as, Oscar films go. But it's not like they can't champion other films. But, yeah, that movie it came out so early in the year, I think around the same time as the Oscars of last year happened. So it's, hard to really say if Grand Budapest Hotel can get that high.
It did get a lot more box office buzz than Wes Anderson's other films, but
it's its highest grossing next to it surpassed Royal Tenenbaum. So yeah, it's done well, but again, it just came out so early. And that's kind of where we're at. And there's a lot
of callback too for the Judge.
It's as you said, though, you know, there's all these other films coming out right now.
Yeah. And you know, presumably good films, a lot of movies that I've seen just in the past few weeks that are that are guaranteed that we'll get, you know, some love. Good question though, Mark. Mike has, where the hell is the Green Inferno movie? This is the Eli Roth horror film, because he was expecting it to come out at some point. The problem is that the studio that was going to distribute it has a lot of issues, a lot of bankruptcy. There's a lot of things going on, and that movie is just sitting in limbo now, and it has no real intended release date at this very time. It could be up to next year, it could be longer, it could be never. It's something very crazy that's happened as far as that movie's going.
It could be the next Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, could be.
Could be, yeah. We just need, a lone billionaire to buy the rights of it and then distribute it.
I would like to see a new Eli Roth movie. I haven't seen one of those in a while, but...
one where he's directed.
One where he's directed, yeah. He's certainly been involved in plenty
of
things.
He's been
a lot of stuff.
Producer and acting.
I know this is only for L.A. people, but The New Beverly, which Quentin Tarantino, he already owned, but now he's kind of programming. On Halloween, they're doing an Eli Roth marathon where it's, all of his movies... plus some movies that he, some gory Italian movies, because he's huge on that. And, presumably it could be a surprise screening of Green Inferno if they get the rights of it, but that's not guaranteed yet. So, Mike, if you want to travel to L.A., get a ticket for the 31st New Beverly screening and maybe see that movie, then you'll find it. There you go.
Scott asks us, I want a viewer's guide on how to judge a movie by its trailer. With specific examples. Tough to say.
I don't know. I saw the Judge trailer and I got exactly what I expected out of that, a bad movie.
I say tough to say because sometimes they cut a trailer specifically to screw with you. And they also sometimes use... You guys have mentioned this, which I didn't really catch on to, but a lot of Christopher Nolan films, they kind of just show early scenes. And they don't actually show anything else. So it kind of hints at what the movie's going to feel like. But not what the entire movie is going to be.
Well, the thing with movies by Christopher Nolan and J.J. Abrams, obviously, David Fincher, a lot of these kind of directors, they have control over the trailers. They get a lot of creative input into what they want to show. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think you don't need to avoid Interstellar trailers, Abe, because they know what they're doing. You're not going to be ruined by anything because they know exactly how to sell these movies without spoiling anything for you. So you can just see how beautiful these trailers are and be more excited about this movie without ruining anything for yourself.
Yeah.
That said, if you like those directors, you're probably going to like those movies. Rare that you're really it's probably rare that you're super disappointed by any of these movies. Some people want to knock Dark Knight Rises, for example, but I mean, it's not like you weren't going to see that movie. It's not like you didn't appreciate that movie for what it was, I guess.
I'm glad I didn't see the trailers, though, because otherwise I wouldn't know there was a Batcopter in there, and I was like, oh.
Well, yeah, those trailers depend on those trailer moments.
Yeah, for sure.
There
are movies that have special effects sequences that sometimes even feel more geared towards having a movie to sell in a trailer versus actually being necessary in a movie, which you can sometimes tell because they're generally smaller movies that have randomly here's a giant explosion or something. It's that's in all the trailers. Did it matter in the movie? Not necessarily, but
probably not, but
it got people to come to the theater. Yeah, that kind of thing.
And exactly. Also, just to kind of directly answer that, if you find elements of the trailer that you enjoy, Scott, I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy the movie. If you listen to the music that they're playing or the score that they're using or this kind of shot sequences in terms of the cinematography and whatever else, I'm pretty sure if you pay attention to those things, you'll like the movie.
Something like Prometheus, which I liked, but I know a lot of people were disappointed because the trailer really sold a great sci-fi film that will be as good as Alien, which is a crazy unrealistic expectation for any movie.
Flip side, sometimes the directors of trailers have no input from the directors of the actual movie. Because sometimes they actually just have some guy just cut a bunch of scenes and make a trailer. So, you do have to be careful. But again, I'd say generally if you kind of like the trailer and you kind of like the people behind the movie, then you should be okay.
Well, then you get something like Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where, again, a movie.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, okay.
As I said, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Add a reference out.
Where they had a cut of that movie that they handed over to a person that could cut a trailer, but a lot of the scenes in that movie ended up not being in the movie, so you get things like, you get isn't that the question of the day, and that's not in the movie.
Right.
You get things like that that give you an expectation of a certain kind of plot thread, and that plot thread doesn't even exist anymore.
Right.
It's
tricky, though, because the last thing I'll say is sometimes... And Aaron, you've mentioned this more than I have, but sometimes you'll get something in a trailer, and because it doesn't happen, you know that it's like the last thing in the movie, which
kind of wait. Yeah,
yeah.
My best example of that is Departed, where you see Mark Wahlberg holding a gun doing something, and you don't see that movie. It's not in there at all until the last 2 minutes of the movie.
And you're like, oh, okay.
And I wouldn't even say I was spoiled by this, except for the fact that I saw the Departed trailer like 14 times during the summer that movie was coming out. But you kind of get an ingrained impression of something that has to happen at some point. I can't say that I was like waiting for a scene with Mark Wahlberg to hold a gun, but at the same time, when it happened, it's like, oh yeah, that's supposed to happen. And so I guess it kind of sways you a certain way in your perception, I guess. But
yeah, again, going back to the whole Spider-Man thing, I guess the way the Rhino ended, you kept on.
Yep, I mean,
there's going to be this big clash, and they're like, oh, that's it.
That's the kind of thing where, again, because I like Amazing Spider-Man too, but where you're doing the exact last scene of the movie in the trailer. It's like that marketing was a mess for that movie. I didn't know how to sell it for some reason, but whatever. All right, let's move on now. Let's get to
Aaron, I believe that it's time for some games.
Oh, the games I've been hearing about.
I'm not going to judge you this week.
Thank you.
I thought we were going to go with, like, you play a song and we'll be like, the judge.
Abe, we can't just... Okay. Okay. I'll throw it in when I want to throw it in.
Oh, all right.
This is the improv theme for games, after all. And with that said, I do have a game this week, Abe. Woo-hoo. It is called I Object.
Okay.
These are movies that are based in a courtroom in some way. And basically, I have an IMDb description of said movies, and you just have to guess what that movie is. And okay. So, Michael, this is how we play it. You have to buzz in with your name, so you have to be like, Michael, and then say the answer after I read the question.
All right.
Description. Okay. Okay. So here we go. I'm just going to read out a description. If you have it at any point, so you can interrupt me.
Okay.
Yell out your name, and then yell out the answer if you think you know it. So here we go.
Gotcha.
Some of these might blend together, which is done on purpose because they might be squeezy, but we'll see. Okay. A lawyer in the Depression-era South defends a black man against an...
Abe!
Yep.
Damn it.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird is the correct answer. You're on the board. That's the easiest one here.
All right.
All right, here's the next one. An exceptionally adept Florida lawyer is offered a job to work in New York City for a high-end law firm with a high-end boss, the biggest opportunity of his career to date. But who is his boss?
Florida, New York?
Mm-hmm. I'll say it's a 90s movie.
90s movie. Florida, New York.
I'll say the boss is a big deal.
The boss
is a big
deal. I feel like you're throwing out clues that... We should already have the answer for it.
Yeah.
It's a little vague given what the movie is.
Florida lawyer.
I'm going to say hoo-ah.
Abe?
Yeah.
Shoot. It's the one with Johnny Depp and Al Pacino. The Devil's Apprentice?
I'm going to say Devil's Advocate.
Yeah, Devil's Advocate is correct. And it's Keanu Reeves.
Oh, Keanu Reeves. Okay.
Donnie Brasco, Johnny Depp. Here's the next one.
Okay.
This one might be quick. Neo-military lawyer Caffey defends Marines accused of murder.
A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men is the
answer. Yes.
Here's the next one. A lawyer takes on a negligent homicide case involving a priest who performed an exorcism on a young girl.
There was a law aspect of that movie? I don't know which movie, but... can you repeat the clue?
A lawyer takes on a negligent homicide case involving a priest who performed an exorcism on a young girl.
Really? I'm going to say Abe. Exorcist or the Exorcist Part 3.
Incorrect.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Okay, the answer is The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which is in our feedback section as one of the favorite court-based films. Good job,
I saw
guys.
That, and I was like, Emily Rose? Wait, are they talking about the horror movie?
Yeah, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which is heavily based in a courtroom.
I never saw it.
Apparently.
Yeah, I never saw it either, so.
Seems very clear to me now. The majority of that movie takes place in a courtroom.
Ah, it's not a spinning head thing. Okay.
The next one. A young lawyer joins a prestigious law firm, only to discover that it has a sinister dark side. A young lawyer joins a prestigious law firm, only to discover that it has a sinister dark side.
I'm now realizing I need to watch more courtroom drama movies.
I'll say this is a 90s movie. I'll say it stars one of the people that starred in another one of these movies that we already mentioned.
Mm.
Back when courtroom dramas were big. I'm also going to say John Grisham.
Abe.
Yeah.
The Firm.
The Firm is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Is that with
Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Here's the next one. Two New Yorkers are accused of murder in rural Alabama while on their way back to college, and one of their cousins, an inexperienced loudmouth lawyer not accustomed to Southern rules and manners, comes to defend them.
I wanted to hear the whole thing.
Yeah.
My cousin Vinny.
My cousin Vinny. That's the correct answer. My cousin Vinny is great, by the way. That is a movie I will watch anytime it is on, ever. Two Utes. An altar boy is accused of murdering a priest, and the truth buried several layers. Truth is buried several layers deep.
I feel as though Michael knows this one.
Dude, it's on the tip of my tongue. I know who stars in it and everything else. So,
altar boys?
Yes.
An altar boy is accused of murdering a priest, and the truth is buried several layers deep.
That one movie.
With Susan Sarandon?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Michael, name the star.
Richard Gere and Edward Norton, I think.
Yeah.
Richard Gere and Edward Norton?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Michael because he can't think of Primal Fear, but yeah.
Ah, okay.
Here's the next one. A defense attorney has a crisis of conscience when he represents a wealthy client who has a foolproof plan to beat the system. This lawyer also resides in a certain type of transportation.
Hmm.
Based on a series of books.
Abe, The Boxcar Children.
The what?
The Boxcar Children.
The Boxcar Children?
That's probably not it.
No.
I'm waiting for that movie to come out.
What's The Boxcar Children?
It's this book series where they go around solving mysteries with their grandfather.
Is it going to be a movie?
No, probably never.
Yeah. You're going to say The Hardy Boys since we're sticking to that genre of movie.
Sure. I'm going to say The Lincoln Lawyer because you guys have no idea what
Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah.
Here's the next one. After a prank goes disastrously wrong, a group of boys are sent to a detention center where they are brutalized. Over 10 years later, they get their chance for revenge.
Wow, that sounds like a really good movie.
There's an animated film about the Boxcar Children, not this one.
I was like, what? Group of boys, 10 years later, revenge.
I'm going to start naming names in the cast.
Okay.
Jason Patrick, Brad Pitt, Rob De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Kevin Bacon. It's a lot of big names.
Yeah, this huge list of names. I wonder where they...
90s movie.
Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro.
It's a Barry Levinson film. Time is up. It is Sleepers.
Pass. I gotta use that more.
Okay, here we go. A just-divorced man must learn to care for his own son and then must fight in the court to keep custody of him.
Abe.
Yeah.
Liar.
Nope.
Okay.
What? In what scene in Liar Liar does he fight in the court to keep custody of his son?
He's like, Max, I love you.
Okay, so you failed that one.
I was going to say Liar Liar 2, actually.
Oh, you guys. Well, the film is Kramer versus Kramer. I'm close to winning this game, by the way, guys.
I mean, Liar Liar is kind of alliterative, like Kramer versus Kramer.
Good job, Abe.
Yeah.
The next one. An idealistic young lawyer and his cynical partner take on a powerful law firm representing a corrupt insurance company. 90s were big in courtroom dramas, by the way.
Seriously.
Guys.
I was going to say, like, wow.
The Christian movie.
Abe.
Yeah?
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Nope. I'm going to say this. Think about Looper.
Looper? Yikes.
Wow. Looper, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm feeling like you're referencing Bruce Willis?
Think of some character names in Looper. Reference.
Abe, again?
Reference. Abe.
Yeah?
The Rainmaker.
The Rainmaker is the correct answer.
I was like, wait a minute, there's a movie called The Rainmaker, right? Is that the one with Chris O'Donnell?
No, it's Matt Damon and Danny DeVito. Chris O'Donnell's The Chamber. Let's see.
Another John Grisham movie, right?
Yeah, it is, and it's not good.
Book.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. Here's the last one. The families of children who died sue two companies for dumping toxic waste, a tort so expensive to prove the case would could bankrupt their lawyer.
Abe.
Yep.
Michael Clayton?
Nope.
Civil Action.
A Civil Action is the correct answer. So, like, there's not even a courtroom scene in Michael Clayton.
Yeah, there isn't. But he's the guy that you call. That movie, you don't kill him.
That movie's amazing.
That movie is really good.
Tony.
Why couldn't we talk about that?
And his brother, Dan Gilroy, also did a great movie. We'll get to that later weeks, though. Okay, let's see. Let me add this up.
I think Aaron won this
game. Beep, boop, beep, 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 beep. Wow, I was close to winning, but Abe, you won. You won by 1 point.
Yes, thank you.
And he managed to pull this one off. And because Michael did put in a valiant effort, he does get to come back to the show at some
point. Right.
All right, that sounds great.
There you go.
That's my prize.
Yep. Here we go. Here's the next thing. Out Now presents What's Out Now. These are new movies coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming this week. And we got a host of things here. X-Men Dofp, Days of Future Past.
Yeah, go see it. I guess it's fun. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess go see it. I'll wait until the special edition comes out with actual rogue scenes in it.
Yeah, I need those pivotal Anna Paquin scenes back in the movie, I'm sure. I'm sure that'll make it better. Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
I totally forgot that movie existed, like what you said last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that movie did come out.
It's a quiet movie.
Another great DreamWorks picture.
Is it good?
It's I think it's fine.
Okay.
Right. Scott Mendelsohn hated
sarcastically.
It. So Scott Mendelsohn hated it. I know that.
Wow.
Let's see. Fargo season one comes out this week.
Great.
It's great. My God. Watch great. That show. It's so good. Watch Billy Bob Thornton be amazing in that show.
Isn't that show?
Yeah, it's in him and Martin Freeman. Both.
Yeah.
Freeman. Yeah, my boy.
The this new discovery, Alison Tolman, plays the female character in that, the female officer in that show. She's great. Like, it's a great show. Oh, my God. Penny Dreadful season one. I didn't watch the show. I heard good things about it.
I heard good things about it too. Yeah, I mean that's the one.
Is
Josh
that Ava Green in that show?
Yeah, Ava Green and Josh Hartnett and a bunch of people.
It's on Showtime.
It's on Showtime. Yeah. And lastly, just because I wanted to point this out, Kingpin makes its debut on Blu-ray.
Really?
Kingpin's a great movie.
That is a good movie. People should go see it. Yeah.
People like Dumb and Dumber, but I like Kingpin and There's Something About Me. Those are my Farrelly Brother movies. Kingpin's so good.
I mean, like that was like during a time in which Woody Harrelson wasn't really doing too many movies. And then he did this one, and people thought he was great in it.
He's great.
I was like, he is good in it. And then, also Randy Quaid,
also great.
Yes, very good.
The way that plot plays out. Billy Murray is amazing in that movie too. By the way, his hair. Oh my God. Anyway, let's get back from our Kingpin retrospective. Let's move on. Next week on the show, Fury. We're talking about Fury with Brad Pitt, the Beef himself. Michael Pena,
Logan Lerman,
and John Bernthal. Yeah. Basically, it's Pena, Pitt, and Perks. That's what we got for Fury next week. So it's gonna be
Pena, Pitt, and Perks. I like that.
Pena,
yeah,
Pitt, Perks. Yeah, triple P's.
Trip P.
I got to get an A, so I'll have a Trip A podcast and do that.
Trip A
for Trip P's.
Yeah.
So that's next week. We'll talk about Fury and all the tank business that's going on with that. And for now, last thing here before we wrap up, Michael, we ask this to every week at the end of the podcast. What should people go and see in theaters right now? Like, what's the movie people should go and see?
Whiplash.
Yep.
Oh, is that? Well, that's like super limited, right?
It's in a few theaters this weekend. It expands next week.
Yeah, if you're in those cities right now, go check it out. And just be patient. It'll open Friday, I think, White.
Abe?
I'm going to say Gone Girl.
I'm also going to say Gone Girl. So there you go. Yeah,
great.
There you go.
Not The Judge. I think that's another one that I can say.
I'm pretty sure that's why we didn't say it.
Yeah, okay. All right, now, so that's gonna do it. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com for all my Blu-ray reviews. You can also find me at Twitter at twitter.com/aaronsps4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose, # Ghost in the Shell?
Okay. Michael, where can people find
you? All right, you can find my work at movieviral.com or geeksofdoom.com, and you can find me on Twitter on, I guess I have to spell it out, but EELYAJEKIM.
It's basically your name backwards.
It's my nickname backwards, yes.
And yeah, you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher, as well as at hhwld.com. That is the podcast network that hosts our show, along with other fun shows about comics and TV and stuff, fun stuff like that. The Walking Dead TV podcast is coming back pretty soon on there, as well as this new show that I guested on recently, DC TV, which is a podcast all about the various DC comic properties that are on now TV shows. So all that and more you can find at hhwld.com.
All that and more. Listen to us over outnow.podomatic.com as well as soundcloud.com/NLPodcast.
Feel free to email us. I mentioned a contest earlier, but you also let us know your thoughts on The Judge or Gone Girl or other such movies that have come out recently at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Or just rants and raves. We love those as well.
Yeah, rants and raves. Yeah.
Yeah. You can also interact with us over at facebook.com/NLPodcast, or you can tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And feel free to follow our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. And lastly, feel free to use our voicemail line, 972-798-3830. That is, you can put more rants and raves there as well.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, so, Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for letting me be on this show.
For sure. Always fun to have new guests, and always fun to have guests that don't suck. So you're in that category.
Right.
not like that Adam Gentry character.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. We joke. We love Adam. But yeah, next week we're going to talk about Fury. That should be some good tank fun. But for now, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye. The mama cat came home, out in F&A, proceeded to shut up to all his newfound friends. He said, I've been aware, I slept with.
Get on him for doing a voice.
he's Korra's uncle in Legend of Korra. Great.
I haven't seen season 2 yet.
You got to get on that.
I should.
You got to get on season 2 just to see season 3, because season 3 is like the best season of like any form of Avatar.
I was sad when they said this is obviously a digression, but
yep.
I was sad when they weren't going to do 4 books, but then they're doing 4 books, right?
No, yeah, no, they're not airing them on TV anymore. That's the problem.
Oh yeah, but I mean they were going to stop at like 2 books.
So they're going to, well,
or 3 books.
We can keep going in this. We'll see how much of this stays in the show. They did the first book. They did Air for Legend of Korra. That became super popular, so they're like, yeah, we can do more. So they're going to do at least 3.
Okay. The so other elements.
Yeah, so they're not even the elements. They're different titles.
Because
like the first season of or Legend of Avatar Last Airbender, that had like the seasons in it. But so they had the first season, which was a success, so they got the chance to do 3 more, if not more. They did the second season. They did the third season, which was getting terrible ratings because it's on like Fridays at 7 or something like that on Nickelodeon. And
I mean, yeah, what are those 12-year-olds doing? They're going to go to like dance parties.
And so the last like 4 or 5 or 6 episodes of the third season was online only. There was no more television broadcast. And with that, the fourth season came, like it started at the beginning of October, which was not like it would generally be, you know, like 6 or 7 months later, as you know, any show would be. But instead, they're just like, we're just going to burn them all off now online. So that's so yeah, it is ending with this current season that's on.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well,
there you go.
That was our
Korra callback.
Avatar,
right there.
Yeah. Korra tangent.
We'll see. You can put that at the end.
Watch the show.
Put that at the end of the episode. Put it after the blooper.
am I editing this week?
Yeah, you are. No, you're not. I am.
This is why I'm not saying anything, because I don't watch the show.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Don't worry. You and I can edit
this week. Oh, that's.
I'm just actually downstairs from your place too.
It's an easy week for me this week, so it's good. Okay.
Yeah. You got to show this part where they're walking opposite ways.
Oh boy, like, that's a highlight scene right there.
Yeah.
You know why? Symbolism.
As if you didn't get enough of it in the first 45 minutes.
No, there's another 2 hours to make sure you do. By the way, David Krumholtz is like huge now. When did he become the Hulk?
He's actually been preparing for that role. He's gonna be the CG Hulk. He's gonna use his body.
He's like super big.
He did get pretty large. He's geared up for Santa Claus 5. He's going to be the next Santa Claus. He's going to kill Tim Allen.
Bernard is the new Santa Claus. That's
it's a coup.
Tim Allen comes back. He's like, Bernard, looks like you're all grown up. I'm the one with the curse, but you just keep eating. Bernard's the new Santa Claus.
Bernard, yeah.
Oh my god.
David Crumble.
We need to find the picture of him and the judge and like check that out. It's like, how's David Crumble preparing for the new Santa Claus movie?
The judge.
Hashtag Bernard. Oh shit. Okay. All right. Oh boy.